For those of you that don't know me, I'm Thomas Orgella. I'm turning 60 in less than a month. It's hard to believe. I only look 45, but you know, it's like, we all got to grow up someday. And part of my background, I found the book in 1969, so I'm a 40-year reader now. Finally made 40. And that's it. And it was pretty profound when I found it. It was exactly what I was looking for. I was out in San Francisco doing the hippie thing and smoking drugs and checking out all the gurus, and I just couldn't quite get the answers I want until a fellow named Arthur let me look at his book one day, and it's like instantly I knew I'd found it. Instantly. It's like a done deal.
Who was it?
A fellow named Arthur. I've never seen him since. So, no. And, you know, over the years I've gotten various things. I've gone to a lot of conferences, and I got involved with the Family of God, and I was an area coordinator, and I did different things over the years, and got in the general counsel, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, I don't even know now. And I'm now the chair of the outreach committee, so I'm one of the decision makers, and I really like being the chair of the outreach committee because I have lots of ideas. I'm just, something's feeding me. My thought adjuster talks to me, and I say, okay, we'll go do that next. And I don't believe that I personally can do very much, but I can hold a vision for what's possible. And I think that's really my job, is to be the visionary, the one that says, here's the roadmap. Who wants to take that trail? You know, because it'll lead somewhere. And some ideas may not be great, some may be great, but time will tell. And so over the years, I've always been an organizer. I started organizing like concerts and folklore societies and food co-ops, and I just got it in my blood to organize. I just love, if I see a potential, I think, well, you know, if we put this and this, we could have, you know, so. I've got a lot of experience in seeing how things go together. How do you put a team together? How do you get to this goal that you see that's possible? And some of the things, like I helped co-found InterLife International, which you may have heard of, and Mara's a part of that foundation. And we're kind of a think tank of what's possible. Like how can we bring training to young people? How can we bring the revelation into different ways? And you know, train people through service projects. That's kind of one of the main focuses, and that's been really fun. And as chair of the outreach committee, outreach has kind of partnered with InterLife International, the ideas that they've come up with, and so a lot of what you'll hear is a mixture. Like some of the ideas we've done is Cosmic Cafe is something we've started, and they kind of pop up here and there around the country. People, Cosmic Cafe is an idea to It's like taking the study group into public. You know, like you rent a room at the library or you get a room at a church or somewhere, and you put some posters up and you say, hey, you know, tonight we're discussing aliens from other universes or whatever. And people come, hey, what's this? I want to hear about the aliens. And sooner or later, you start talking out of the ranch book. And people will say, where'd you get that from? You know, and since it's an open group, they can bring whatever book they want to bring. Well, we like to read the ranch book. And so it's a very neutral space where people can come together and share ideas. And you know, our Cosmic Cafe has sold quite a few books and turned people on to the Urantia book, so it's a way to get the ideas out. And we've started the ambassador program so people can take on projects and be coached through their projects. 50K, and I'll talk about these, but basically what I think of myself is somebody who creates delivery systems for the revelation, if that makes sense. It's like the revelation didn't come with a delivery system. It came with a book distribution system that was developed, but that alone is not going to deliver the revelation to humanity. That's just one little piece of it. So I think we, the people, are kind of left to devise methods and means to bring it forward. So let's see if this works. So one quote I like, when man goes into partnership with God, great things may and do happen. So that to me says that it's not can we do it, it's do we have a partner that guarantees our ability to do it. And we know we have a partner. When we say, Father, what's your will? Okay, I'm making that my will. Great things will happen. We can count on that. So the goal of this workshop is to just explore ways to bring the you know, this revelation to the spiritually hungry planet. We have a planet that's just I mean, I don't want to get into dire things, but we can look out the window and see what's going on. The people that are suffering and the drug abuse and the child abuse and the whatever abuse. You know, there's just people in really abject slavery all over the planet. And my commitment is to bring the revelation to the planet as quick as possible. That's my commitment. That's what the rest of my life will be dedicated to, is how are we going to do that? What's it going to take? Where should I put my attention that'll make that happen? That's where I'm going to put my attention. So, and help anybody else that's willing to go there. And the way this workshop is structured, just so you know, it's you feel free to ask questions. My only desire, since we're a fairly small group, I don't think it's going to be a problem, but if it was a larger group, I'd ask people to only ask questions that move us in the direction that we're going, not take us on a side road. So, so Melchizedek said, spiritual development depends first upon the maintenance of a living spiritual connection with true spiritual forces, and second, on the continuous bearing of spiritual fruit. So it's like we really need to yield, you know, the ministry to one's fellows that has been received from us. It's like we have freely received and we need to freely give. And I kind of shudder when I think about how much we've been given. And I personally, that's a judgment of mine, I personally think the movement as a whole is stingy. That's my own personal judgment. Turn the mic off. No, but you know, it's a prejudice of mine. It's a judgment, and I own it. And I think I've been stingy. I think I have failed to take opportunities at times to really share the revelation freely with people that were probably hungry for it, and I just missed the opportunity. I was too busy doing something else in my head, or didn't have the time, or was worried that they wouldn't like me if I shared it with them, you know. And so they missed out. So I think it's really, we're called to do this. It's not like it's a good idea. It's like our calling. If we are students of the revelation. If we're not going to do it, there's nobody else out there that's going to do it. It's up to us. And I just want to take a second, because what we get into pretty quickly when we start to look at sharing is the whole concept of proselytizing, evangelizing, missionary work, and they all have deep connotations and emotional trigger buttons in our psyche, right? You ask people about proselytizing, and people just shudder. Oh, the Mormons are, and the Jehovah's came up to my door, and it's just, and people are scared to death that the Arantia movement will start to look like that. Like when you say outreach, oh, we're going to go door to door and beat people up with the book, and. And I want you to be clear that any of the work I do is not geared that way. But we need to have an understanding of what proselytizing and... Mary, you still writing something? I'll change the slide if you're... Okay. Oh, you're good. Okay. So missionary is a member of a religion who works to convert those who do not share the missionary's faith, someone who proselytizes. And it's derived from the act of sending, right? You're sent out on a mission. And the Mormons commission the young people to go out. Melchizedek commissioned his people to go out. The word is used, Melchizedek commissioned. And it's and the other thing to look at, the first line, it says, now this is just a Wikipedia definition, right? So it's not the gospel. But it says, who works to convert those who do not share the missionary's faith. Now, we have to be really clear that we're Urantia book readers. We read a book called Urantia. We do not have a religion called Urantia. We may personally have religious views based on reading the book called Urantia, but we are not of the religion of Urantia. We're not a religion, and I hope we never become one. So this, in a way, doesn't really apply to us unless we say, there's a new religion called the Urantia book. Do you want to read it? You know, we want you to check it out. You know, give up your belief and believe ours. Then that's proselytizing, and that's what I would call the more zealous type of missionary work. And I hope we don't fall into that. My goal would be that we're much more generous in how we're being with people and how we share the revelation. We're not at all abusive or beat people up. Proselytizing, it says, is the act of attempting to convert people to another opinion, and particularly to another religion. So it's mainly a word that came out of Judaism and Christianity. It's I'm not sure how well we can apply it to ourselves. Other religions attempts to convert people to their beliefs. So I struggle with this a little bit because I don't think that we are going to proselytize. You know, we're not out to convert people. We're out to add leavening to what they already believe. And this is a little bit tough in our culture to, because Mayor and I are working on a Northeast Urantia tour where we're going to go to different towns and have events set up and take some young people, you know, set up some young people to go out touring with a specific intent to contribute to people's lives through service and engaging in conversations and to do some evangelistic work, which means to let people know about the revelation. And we don't necessarily know exactly how to do it. I've had some experiences, but we want to make the mistakes. We want to find out what really works, what methods can we do to help people find the book, and what ways don't work. We tried that, and that was a put-off. We're not going to do that anymore. So we'll basically refine our abilities. My son and I went to... I went to L.A. The society invited me down to speak in the middle of the winter. And so I spoke on 50K, and my son made up... I don't bring those 4x6 cards that are down there, but he printed up the first round of those. You have one? All right, yeah. We printed up a version of that. And... we went down to Venice Beach, which is this boardwalk with all these vendors and everybody from all over the world. When they get to L.A., they want to go to Venice Beach. It's this famous place just to walk and hang out, and it's just all the crazies are there. It's just a wild place. And so we just walked up and down, and we'd bump into somebody. You'd kind of walk, and you see somebody alongside you there, like a young person. And I'd just say, hey, have you heard of the Urantia book? And they'd say, well, what's that? And, you know, you get in a little conversation. We didn't stop anybody. We'd only walk up to people that looked like they'd be open to a conversation. And we talked to the booth people. And, you know, one good example is we went to one booth person, got to talking to him, and we said, hey, have you heard of the Urantia book? And we gave him a card. And he said, that's it. He said, that's the third time I've heard about the book. I'm just going to go get one, you know. Which is what you just love to hear, right? Yeah.
There's something to that.
Well, there is.
It's called product placement.
It's very true. The first time people hear something, unless they're super hungry, they're probably just going to zip by. And the second time, oh, yeah. And then they probably forget about it. And then about the third time, they're like, geez, is an angel telling me something here? What's going on, you know? Maybe I should check this out. So, let's see. Let's move on to second mile quote. So we all know this second mile quote. it's not the first mile of compulsion and duty or convention that will transform mankind. And I want to stop right there, because what is in the Urantia movement, what is the first mile? What is our convention? Is having a conference like this conventional in the Urantia movement? It's kind of conventional to get together and study. Study groups are conventional, right? And we're loyal to our study groups. I used to think it was a duty. I was in a study group for years, and I was down at Family God working on winter, and one of the couples announced that they were no longer going to go to study group because they had a restaurant, and I was like flabbergasted. You're what? You're not going to be in a study group? I mean, that's how devoted I was to study group. I just thought you just had to be in a study group. It's just, well, of course. I mean, you can't quit. And now it's like, you know, I'm no longer in a full-time study group. I'll go occasionally, but you know, I spent a lot of years in one. But I realized I was in that first mile of duty. It's my duty to study this book with my compatriots. It's really the second mile that we need to look at, and it's. A free service and liberty-loving devotion that betokens a Jesusonian reaching forth to grasp his brother in love and sweep him under, and sweep him on under spiritual guidance towards the higher and divine goal of mortal existence. It's like sweeping them up. It's like, that's when I picture people on the road or we're out doing our work and as we pass by, it's like, it's like Jesus did. He just swept people up in his little, in his, into his world and included them and loved them and transformed them by what he had to say to them and how he was with them. It was all very, very transformative. And I think that's the second mile that we're really being called to go. We can easily sit in study groups till we're blue in the face, right? And I love study groups, and I think everybody should study. But I don't think we should ever stop there. I think it's a mistake our movement has kind of slid into of let's just study more, you know, as if, you know, it's that thing about insanity, you know, you keep doing something more and more and more, you think if you do more of it, it'll make it, you know, but that's, you just get more of the same thing, you know, and we know that study is good, but I think what we don't really understand is that the second mile is what is where the real juice is happening. It's the good stuff, you know. And so we have to design ourselves, reinculturate ourselves to be readers that willingly go the second mile, step out there. Let's say somewhere that so few people have really lived the life that Jesus taught. It's unfortunate that so few people have really gone there. And at lunch today, somebody was asking a question. He said, it took a while to understand it. He says, well, do you know where these people are? I'm like, what people? You know, the people that, not the people that just read the book. You know, the people that really, and what he was saying is like, who are the masters? Who are the people that really live it? And all I could say to him is, well, I says, those people are kind of hard to find because they're not the ones up giving speeches and the ones that you see all around. They're not the figureheads. They're the ones that quietly just live that life Jesus taught us, right?
You're talking about like a rancho lifestyle?
Well, truly living, truly going the second mile. A lot of them are pretty invisible. But when you get to know some people, you say, wow, there's one. This person really lives their faith out, and they really demonstrate it. Everybody they go to, they touch deeply, you know. It's like a Mother Teresa type person. She didn't toot her horn or have to give speeches, but she was totally dedicated to her religious views.
But you're talking about people that got there through their study of the Arantia book?
What I mean is going beyond your study. Study is kind of an intellectual pursuit. Well, the assumption from the question was that, okay, we've read this book now. Okay, now who's really living it? You know, like, who's really gone into it and actually embodies it? Because it's one thing to study it, and there's a danger in overstudying something, right? You can get the mastery of can remember every little letter, right? Yeah, you got to get out and act. It's kind of pointless if all you do is study, study, study. Now, why be a permanent student?
I haven't been around a whole lot. Mm-hmm. So from a newcomer's point of view, I would have a tendency to say that there might be a tendency on the part of some of the old timers mm-hmm. to have a little bit of intellectual snobbery.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it comes off that way.
Mm-hmm.
About, I know more about the book than you do.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you possibly have anything important to add
mm-hmm.
when you've only been reading it for 2 years,
right.
1 year, six months? I think we have to be careful of that too.
Yeah, it's the human ego. You know, like, I don't really like to tell people too often that I've been reading the book for 40 years because it doesn't mean anything. There's people that have read the book 2 years that understand it better than I do. You know, it's like, so what? You know, it's, but that's you can use it for snobbery. Like, yeah, I've been reading the book for a long time. It just tells you I'm really old is all it really does. So. not that I live it or understand it any better than somebody else. So anyway, any questions about that? I can't emphasize it. Hmm? Well, I give it my best shot.
There wouldn't be doing this otherwise.
That's true. Yeah, I appreciate, you know, it's, I don't want to get into too much of a philosophical realm, but, you know, the thing about you are your brother's keeper. It's like, If you get in deep into language, a study of language and ontology and what it is to be human, you start to discover that I is not I, right? I is I. If you know what I mean? Yeah. Anyway. So, let's see. So one idea I wanted to share is that, you know, I just wanted to get something out of the way, and that's that some people think it's kind of like the world's not ready. I just wanted to clear this one out. Does anybody think the world's not ready, or any individual? Can you name me an individual who's not ready?
I don't know if the book is for everybody.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. Let's chew on this a little bit.
I think it is absolutely for everyone. Whether or not they want to accept it and whether or not they're in their life point to accept it is entirely up between the thought adjuster and them as far as I'm concerned. My job is to let somebody know about the book, and if they're interested, I'll share whatever knowledge I can possibly impart to them. But I'm not looking to convert them or change them or anything. I just want them to know this is a revelation from God, believe it or not,
and then not be disappointed. It doesn't
care less, because you know what? Now the thought adjuster has something to use. You know, the thought adjuster, in my opinion, you know, it's just another tool for them and the angels to use. It's a neat word. It's something that you can Google. It sticks in your head. You know, you hear it a third time. Eventually, those angels will work their magic, and I don't know how they do it. They just do it. That's my take.
Mayor, what do you think?
Well, I think there are some individuals who aren't ready for the original book. And I personally had the book for a dozen years and hardly read it. Until something happened in my life that was a spiritual awakening. I read the book 3 times in 1 year and thought, gosh, I want to know what's in here. I was ready prior to that. And when you think about second grade math and calculus, that doesn't mean the kids sitting in the second grade won't someday be able to do that calculus. But you can't go from the second grade to the calculus in 1 week if you don't know your multiplication tables yet. And I think that your Rancho book is advanced spirituality. And I don't think everybody's done yet.
Okay.
It's the whole lead the horse to water.
So I've had experiences where somebody has tried to turn a person onto the Urantia book, and they never read the book. But I had people coming to me say, oh, Bill told me about the Urantia book. Bill never read the Urantia book. But he knew his friend would enjoy it, right? So should I have not told Bill? You know, it's like, you know what I mean?
So should you have not told Bill? Had he not told Bill, the friend that, you know...
But Bill knew that it wasn't his thing, but it was his buddy's, because his buddy was looking, right? And that's happened several times to me.
That's happened to me. My sister gave me the book. She still doesn't know what's in the book.
So luckily somebody gave her the book. She wasn't ready, but she got it to you.
That's right.
So who are we to judge where that's going to go? Our job is just to share the news that the revelation is on the planet. Jesus had that one incident on the road with Ganon, and that, so that person's not ready, you know. But if we had more time, maybe he would come around. But I'm not Jesus, and I'm not going to say that I know that one person on the road to Damascus or wherever they were heading, you know, that I'm not going to take that chance of missing somebody. So, and the other thing, if you have that attitude at all, 1%, if you have that attitude 1%, then there's probably somebody out there that's not ready. You'll start to see too many people out. You'll see 50% of the people that way. So if you just erase that from your thinking, say, I think everybody's ready. I'm just going to play it that way. Then everybody is fair game to hear about the revelation from your mouth. So, fair enough?
Yeah.
And I put an image of a chiseled out stone, because even if somebody appears to have a heart of stone,
yeah, but he's thinking about it, see?
He's thinking about it. I like the image of, you know, I was trying to find a picture of granite, you know, because what Michelangelo say, David was in there, it just took me a while to get him out, you know. It's like, you just take away everything that's not David, and there's David in the stone sculpture, right, in the granite sculpture. And it's like, you know, this is a good image. I'm sure it's not very bright, but it's like in the master's eye, he looks at a big blob of clay, and this is what he sees, right? And that this eye should, it needs to be our eye. We look at an individual who's just a big blob of crap, right? His head's going 15 different directions, and he's spewing cuss words. But inside of him is this, right? Because the master sees what's possible. And I like that image because that's what we are. We're sculptors. We're wordsmiths that can sculpt words that will transform other people. Because words transformed us, and so we know how it works. So in Jesus' ordination sermon, and this was kind of hard picking quotes, because I started looking for quotes to verify or back up this thing, and I had so many quotes, and I didn't try to sort them, I just kind of took the ones in order that I had. Of the teacher, more is expected than of the pupil. Of the master, more is exacted than of the servant. Of the citizens of the heavenly kingdom, I think that's us,
yes,
more is required than the citizens of earthly rule. There is more expected of us. And we've got more talents, and we have to... That parable of the talents is... That really hits home.
Don't bury it in a mason jar for the master. Oh, here's the book.
Well, I didn't use the parable of the talents, but it's really a good one because it's like, what talent have we been given? What is our talent? Yeah, it's knowledge of the higher way, of the revelatory insights that were given to us. And we sure as heck... Aurora made me take this, because she had reviewed, my girlfriend Aurora, had me take this out of my talk, because I had this thing in there about, I think Jesus is speaking about if you get into, how did it go exactly? The gist of it was that you don't want to be standing at the gates. And Jesus says, well, I knew you hung out with all these ranch book readers, but did you ever do my good work? Oh, but Master, yeah, I even sold a couple books. But did you do my work? You know, and Aurora thought it was too negative or something. But the message is that I think we all have that to face. You know, we're all going to die someday. We're going to be standing at the judgment halls. You know, trying to wake up on the mansion worlds. So we're going to get shaken down, and yeah, and they're not going to know. But there's going to be a special room for your ranch book readers who didn't do much with it. And they're going to put us all in that room. And it'll be a room that's red and black, you know, like, ooh, what did we do wrong? But Lord, we read the book, you know. I'm just making this up. But, you know, it's like, it's not, I mean, I think we are accountable. So I just wanted to touch on that point. So I want to touch a little bit on a couple things. Like, one thing I really believe is that we, the people, have the power to change the world, right? It's not they, the government, or they, the celestial administration. It's we, the people, are the only ones that change the world. Nobody else is going to do it. They're not going to send a magisterial son to, hey, step aside, I got this handled, you know. It's like, if we want the world to change, if we want poverty to end and wars to end and you name it to end, and there's a lot of you name it's out there in this troubled world, we, the people, are given that sacred duty. It's a humanly sacred responsibility to actually roll up our sleeves, organize ourselves, and go do something. And I guess what I'm asking you today is to actually make a commitment to that, or recommitment, whatever it might be for you. It's it's like some of you probably heard about the 365 Club. I printed a couple out. If you haven't seen it, you're welcome to look at it. And I bring this up because this is an example of a commitment, right? About 6 months ago, I just made this thing up that I was going to introduce a person a day, right? I don't know anybody that's ever done it. I suppose it's been done before, but I don't know. I didn't know. And I thought, well, I'm just going to give it a try. And so I just started introducing somebody every day. And I hit 200 on Tuesday. And I had to do 8 to get to 200, so I wanted to email it out before I came here. So I got to get 8 today. So everywhere I went in town, I had to go to town for a couple hours.
Something wrong with this picture.
So everywhere I went.
8 cards to one person in Canada.
Yes.
Well, the problem that I found being a zealot, person, I've been reading 40 years, but let me tell you something. Once you're a reader and you know that you have 2 million years of schooling to go, quite humbling. So we're still in kindergarten.
We are.
Being a Yuppie zealot and trying to turn people onto the book, this is what's so shattering to your consciousness, is the way you get shut down. The way you get...
This is a good thing to talk about.
The way you get shut down. And so you think, okay, and you come up with just the best you can come up with at that point in time, in your mind, to give that person the joy that you got from this book, okay? And you just get slammed up. And this happens repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly. And this is what we're here to address, you know?
Let's spend a little time addressing that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got plenty of time in our workshop. So I think we all had the experience. We get the book, and we just think, everybody will want to read this, right? We go try to give them away and tell people.
Yeah.
And you get probably about, 90% rejection, 10% either lukewarm or acceptance, right?
More like 99.
Yeah, 99 sometimes. And what I would say about that is a lot of it is just the way that we introduce people. We haven't really learned... You know, ideally, one of the classrooms here would be how to introduce people to the Rancher book, right?
Maybe I'll... how you do it, Tom.
The secret.
Oh, it's a secret.
Well, pick a number. Just pick a number out of there, and let's read that one and see what it was. Just read any of them.
Number 14, checker at the Super One Foods. Talk about her three-year-old daughter. I mentioned... I read in my kids' stories from the UB that really helped them in their life.
I remember that gal. I was just checking out. She was a young gal. I asked her, hey, I just got a little conversation. She said, yeah, I got kids at home. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, my kids, I really enjoyed raising my kids. And I introduced the Rancher book to them. I think your kids would really enjoy it when they're just a little bit older. I always read to my kids in the bathtub, so try that, And I gave her the card, and she looked at it and asked a couple of questions, And that was it. That was an introduction. She has the card, web address, my phone number, my everything.
Yeah. Now, in this case, did she call you?
No.
Right? But that doesn't mean that person has not been touched.
Right.
Or that they don't hand it to somebody else. So we can't try to measure results.
Right.
We don't know how long it takes for that seed to grow and fertile ground or not.
How many things did they pass by? He didn't go back and check on people.
Jesus did not follow up, right?
No.
Isn't that what they say in the book? Yeah. He had no interest in following up on people. I have no interest in following up on people.
Just
yeah.
Yeah.
They have thought adjusters,
But we have, I think, a human need or tendency to want to, get somebody to have as much joy as we have, and we got to move past that. We want them, obviously, to do that, but we can't force it,
See, our job is not to convince at all. Our job is to inform, that's all. We're not proselytizing, we're not converting, we're just informing.
How about recruiting? Are we recruiting?
Well, I think at some point on campus outreach, we're going to do some recruiting. And what it'll look like is, hey, Pato Bonton's playing over in the gym tonight. And if you come and you turn in this thing, we'll give you a free book on the way out. So, hey, can you come tonight, You know what I mean? And they'll maybe come to the concert. Hey, I got a free book too. I come check this out. You know, so that would be kind of recruiting people to come to an event. And we could also say, this is something that hasn't been invented yet, but it's working in my mind. It would be like we'd be on campus. We'd say, hey, we are part of the World Peace Organization. We're collecting. We're enrolling people in your age group, bright young students on campuses, to change the planet forever. Would you like to sign up? And we'll get in touch with you. You know, and the young idealists that they are, depending how we present it to them, they'll say, yeah, I really want to do that. How do I sign up? You know, how do I get involved? And then we start a dialogue with them, and then we say, here's some things we want you to read. And, you know, eventually they find out about the Urantia book. So, I mean, these are all things that we're yet to invent, right? Ways to interface with college students or other age groups that, you know, would appeal to their interest level. And it is all doable. It just takes some research and making some mistakes. And do you have another one, Mary, you want me to read?
Yeah, this one I happen to be a friend to.
Oh, which
so
one's that?
It's interesting to read your account.
Is it accurate? Did I stretch it at all?
It's 105. Crystalline took me to the stunningly beautiful Boulder Tea House for tea and gingerbread cake. A delightful young waiter, David, waited on us, and after he took our order, Crystalline looked at me and said, I know what you're thinking. I pretended to not know, but gave in and slid her a UB intro card and said she could have the honors. We had a delightful visit with David, and he was thoroughly introduced. I left him a big tip. No, 2 months later, and this is when I was with him, 2 months later, I am in Boulder again, and we went to the tea house. I was having lunch with Thomas and Laura that day, and guess who waited on us? David. It took him a second to recall me, and he admitted he had not gotten the book yet. Now, I was sitting there, we were paying the check on our bill. Thomas pulls out this Urantia book card, puts it, you know, on the payment tray that the waiter gave us, along with the payment for the meal. Mm-hmm. It was done so gracefully and easily. Mm-hmm. You know, I would just never think of saying to my waiter, hey, have you read the Urantia book? But somehow Thomas just did this really smoothly. And the waiter picked up the money, and he sees the card, and Thomas says, remember me? And here's the rest of the story. It took him a second to recall me, and he admitted he had not gotten the book yet. He was now confronted by 5 UV readers at his table. From that quarter, we conspired to offer him a book for a low price to see if he had a genuine interest. When he came back, I mentioned we were here for a Urantia conference and could get him a discounted book for $10 if he was interested. He accepted our offer.
He says,
we'll bring him one tomorrow.
And Tevil did. I left town. Actually, we went the next day and he was gone, but we brought it the next day. Tevil dropped it off with him, so my son.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
He now has his old study group.
Yeah, he does.
You know, much of what you were saying, my apprehension initially when I had such a beautiful book was like, I perfectly say, I don't want to lose that opportunity or you know, turn them off and then they'll never come back.
Right.
And then I just adopt the attitude of the script. Just give it to them and what they do with them is what they do.
That's a good New York attitude.
Well, that takes a while to get to that. Point,
yeah.
You know? So if that helps anybody.
Try too hard at first.
Yeah.
So you guys have seen these cards they use?
Yeah.
Have to take one.
About it, like you would if you're telling them about a new record, and if they like it, fine. You know, if they want a good price on it, great. If they don't, you're happy. It's fine. You know what I'm saying?
He's a good idea.
One of the hardest things for me has been when somebody asks me, all right, and you tell them about the book, and then, well, what's it about? I hate that question.
Yeah.
Yeah, what is it about?
Answer that question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about history, it's about science, it's about philosophy, it's about a relationship with God. I mean, how do you...
I think if you just write a spiritual book, if you're interested in spiritual books, you might like this.
That can be a turnoff.
It can turn off a lot of people, too.
Well, but, you know, you just have to try that. If they've already discussed something spiritual with you. I had a stewardess on the plane, and I was interested in another book I was reading. I said, well, if you're interested in this, you might be interested in the Orange Book. So I just gave her the name of it to her. So you don't need to get very specific about what it's about.
You don't.
Don't think you got to teach enough. Like you do new people in class, you just, everybody in the group wants to tell them.
That's
something.
The biggest mistake we make.
Pretty soon,
say too much. It's better to whet their appetites, just whet the appetite and call it good.
In a group situation, then just get us all to shut up. You know, take it on their own.
I have to ask, how much feedback do you have? I mean, how much bounce back from the...
Well, a lot of people are, you know, they're not even, they're in other towns. But locally, like one person is actually number 100, was a guy named Ty who works at Lowe's, who I asked to help me one day. And then, you know, it's like he was, and so I got to talking to him at the counter. And he was, I asked him, I was thinking he used to work at another store. I said, didn't you used to work... And I asked him something about, well, where are you from or something? And he thought I meant, like, where is he from? And so he started telling me about Colorado or wherever he was from. And I tuned him out. I didn't even want to hear it, you know, because I'm just that way. I've got something else I can think about right now. And he said something about instruments, right? And I said, did you say instruments? He says, yeah, I used to make guitars and banjos and stuff. And I'm really interested in music, so we got in this discussion about music and... You know, it went on and on, and then I asked him, I said, well, do you like bluegrass gospel? He said, oh, I love bluegrass gospel. I said, oh, you're religious? See, I mean, you can just follow it in, right? And that led to, well, if you like religion, there's a book I suggest to you, you know? And then I said, by the way, I got to tell you, you know, I'm doing this thing to introduce people to your Rancher Book, and you're number 100, and I just happen to have a book out in the truck. And he was like, I got the book. He was like thrilled. And he's been reading it, and he's just really excited about it, because I'll see him once in a while. And my lumber salesman, same thing. I introduced him to the book. He's in a Christian men's group, and he's been bringing it to his men's group, and they've been pouring through it as a group and just really enjoying it. So it's, you know, the gal at the bank, a young gal introduced. I can't remember what number these people are, but... I was opening up an account. Well, I was opening an account and got to talking to her, and she next time I was in there, she says, hey, my book's coming tomorrow. I'm so excited. And I said, cool. So I haven't talked to her since she's been reading, but.
Well, you know, I have a very large study group that's been around for a long time, made a lot of connections. Actually, Various farmers have made a lot of connections to the Christian church.
Ah.
Large area. And I know there's a lot of closet that they didn't touch and got books. I mean, our city per capita probably has the highest number of Rancher Books.
All right.
I don't know if they get read. I don't know where they're at. They don't come to our city. But we've got a nice closet.
Let's try and close that door.
Churches, as a rule, you have a page in the newspaper that, you know, you move into a town or something like that, you usually find a certain page in the newspaper that advertises all the churches and when their services are. And I'm wondering if we have done any sort of institutional type of, like, advertising on that particular page in local newspapers.
Some people have.
Why didn't I put that?
He takes a quote from the Rancher Book every week and puts it in the paper under that column, and then I think it says call this number if you're interested. There's a number or something so that they
with can contact them. Any results that you know of?
I can't say. We don't have any results from ours, but you have the word in the paper every week, you know. That's all you're trying to do.
Right? I mean,
we're just trying to make it.
If we do that on our own, can
Sure.
Which
go for it.
We can't use the circles, right?
Mm-mm.
We can use this.
Well,
I don't think so.
For certain things. Certain things.
If you're not selling anything, you're nobody else.
Your answer book is enough draw. You don't have to worry about that. Thomas was saying that. I like to use the circles. I like the product placement.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a copyright. It's copyrighted.
Thomas was saying last night that he emails people word of the day.
Yeah. That's
what he told me last night. Mm-hmm. And he's had a lot of good feedback that way.
Mm-hmm. You sign people up for it.
From Truthbook, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you could.
It's very effective.
Just email people word of the day from your rental, and you'd be surprised. It's like bait.
I'm gonna start signing them up.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of guerrilla marketing.
When you think about what we all have objected to, Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on their doors, it's that sense of being oppressed. To take something we may not want.
That's right.
And I was kind of struck by what you said, Emilio. There's a certain freedom and respect for the other person to really not say much at all, other than, hey, you want to take a look at this? If they can or they cannot, you know? And there's pressure on them one way or the other.
And they don't need to respond. They may ask a question, they may not. I've only had two people.
You don't have to see any emotion of how you care one way or the other. You know, we found that out, you know. In India, you know, when people come in our view, once they realized we didn't care if they read it or not, we just wanted to know about it, and they didn't have to change their religion or anything else, and just here it is, if you like it, fine.
Yeah, and as you do it.
Come on in and we'll answer your questions.
Yeah, I guess it
was amazing how it just took the pressure off of them, and then they could come on in.
Mm-hmm.
We had a constant flow of people.
Right.
Anyway, Thomas, we're taking away your class. Move on.
No, this is the class. Were you going to say something, Michael?
Yeah, you know, I kind of decided after doing it a while, and I didn't give any direct feedback. I put a phone number on there for a while, and I put a website on there for a while, and I put an address for our study group, which is inside the property. But then I went back to just the phone number. Is that a... Because I was using phones on your Facebook, and nice card, they don't disappear. You know, I put them up, they'd be gone, and I'd hear it going. I mean, I know the people in this coffee shop and stuff, they know what I'm doing. I know they weren't paying for it, so somebody was taking it. You know, even if, I may not know, you know, and you may not know if you made a connection there, they may have bought a book, they may be.
A lot of people just don't want to commit to a class. They think that, you know, they just don't want to feel like they have to read a certain amount. And a class like we have, you have to read out loud. Most of us do. They go off and into that. You can't just go hide in the back feet like a church.
Well, I forgot one thing. When we were starting, I was supposed to find somebody who's going to go to that wrap-up meeting and be the person that reports on it. Is anybody willing to do that? What do they call that meeting?
The end of the feedback.
Feedback meeting, yes. If anybody's willing, if not. Okay, thank you. So one thing about doing things like putting notices up and cards up, I do that. And I recommend that we do it. I kind of see it as the foundation. I don't see it as the house, right? We have to realize it's the first mile. And the second mile is actually contacting people directly and having that pleasure of doing that. It's really, you're missing out if you don't develop yourself as somebody who touches people as you pass by. You're just missing out. So make sure you separate. Okay, this is good first mile work. You know, nice card. I think I'll get a box. And by the way, anybody can order. There's typos on this, and it's .com instead of .org, and my son just threw these together and sent them. But you can contact me, and if you want a box of these for your society, your study group, put whatever you want on them, whatever contact information. I don't know, it's like $30 for a box of them, which will last you a long time. And then everybody can have them in there. I just keep them in my ashtray because I don't smoke. And anytime I pull up and buy a cup of coffee, or, you know, I just hand one out the window to the coffee gal, or, you know, if I need one, I just grab one. So I keep them real handy, and it makes it a lot easier. Don't be writing stuff on a napkin, you know, don't. Let's be professional, you know. We have graphic designers now that'll make these cards. So just email me if you want cards, and I'll get you some.
Okay.
So I can just send you the PDF even. I'll build the PDF for you, and you can take it to your printer.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just want to touch a little bit on groups like the Family of God is just one. This is the best. I couldn't find a picture of them. I just found this little thing on the Historical Society. And the reason I wanted to mention organizations is because, like, the Family of God is a good example to me because it really affected my life. And all I'd only go down in the wintertime for a little bit, and I'd hang out in Berkeley for a couple, 3 months, and I'd go over to the meetings, and I'd volunteer and work with them. But I was really affected by how they were organized and how they thought and how they took on projects and they were working together. And it had me think that way, like, oh, I can do stuff too. And if you notice, almost all the FOG people are now leaders. You know, they're like Guard was part of FOG, and Jeff Waddles and Sarah Blackstock and Marvin and Francel. And these people are all still real active in the movement, you know. That training school they went to was crucial. And I think it's important for us to develop. I kind of like what Mayor's doing with the Garden Project. You know, we talk quite a bit about this. And InterLife International has had this concept of transformation centers, right? I think it's time for the Urantia movement to go up to the next level, which is we are no longer a group that huddles around and say, what do you think? What do you think? You know, great to meet you. You know, there was a point where we had to do that. We had to just meet people. Like, we didn't want to be alone out there reading this book in the wilderness. We wanted to find some others and socialize and do some studies together. But the time has come where we have enough of a wisdom reserve, you might say, that we need to kind of discharge the battery out into the world. And the only way we're going to do it is to create organizations. This is just one model. That are indeed distribution systems, right? It might be like the 50K program. You know, it kind of, when the whole 50K thing started, it was like, yeah, let's introduce 50,000 people. But then we realized we don't have any wheels on this automobile yet, you know? And the wheels are, okay, we got to create teams to do campus outreach. We got to find ways to take it on the road. You know, let's go take some young people and get them trained up and go do events. Maybe a speakers bureau needs to be revived. And there's all kinds of ideas floating around for how can we do this. Video, more web stuff. And I think our job is to be the creators of the next wave, so to say, the next move. And it has to do with sharing the revelation. And I think some people are a little resistant to it because it looks difficult or hard or impossible. But instead of having an organization where we're virtual, there's one phone number you can call in Colorado, why not have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of centers and people you can call and places where people go get training and summer camps that are happening and traveling shows where young people can just sign up and get on the road and get mentored and become leaders like the Family of God people became leaders, you know.
Is this actually a part of the Urantia movement?
It was in its day. It's no longer going.
It is.
I'm sorry, I assume people know about the Family of God.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, it was Vern Grimsley's radio broadcast that they did out of Berkeley. Yeah, and people would meet, you know. Vern lived in this building on Arch Street, and then downstairs they'd have all their tape recorders and, you know, all this equipment where they would take these tapes and duplicate them and ship them off to radio stations all over the world. And they'd get all these letters, and they'd send literature out. And it was an immense outreach effort. And it was Vern's this dynamic speaker, just the best speaker the movement's ever produced. If you ever heard Vern speak, it's about knock you over.
They have his recordings.
Yeah, you can download his recordings.
They just made a trip up to visit with him and get him on videotape.
His health is not good.
Just
yeah.
Did that. That's
oh, good.
Did
oh, good. Okay.
So good. They need to get him while
yeah.
we got him.
Good. Yeah, I was hoping he'd speak last summer. It didn't happen, but.
I think one of the most infamous memories associated with Fog Bob is, in my understanding, I mean, you were probably there, Thomas, and you know more than that, but there was a time at which the group came to believe that the world was going to be attacked or something of that nature relatively soon, and they all got ready to deal with that, and then nothing appeared to happen.
Nothing happened.
And I would say that there's a spiritual maturity that comes through living through those experiences and going on with your faith anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And those people who were there at that time managed to do that.
Yeah, it was a little tough on them, because what they thought was true, it's kind of like egg on the face. You know, I think it was really tough for them psychologically.
Did they sell property and businesses?
Well, they lost their financing. They just moved to a bigger, what used to be a Catholic seminary farther out of town. A great big facility, which it's too bad it's still not going today, but it was too much overhead, and they lost some support when that whole incident happened. So it was okay. It was almost like good that the tribe got dispersed, because now they're leaders in other ways, so... you know, and I guess I'd just like to say a little something about societies and study groups. I think it's time for societies and study groups to reinvent themselves. And there's been some discussions around the supper table this weekend about that. It's like, you know, if a society was really dynamic and active, what would it be up to, you know? This kind of social structure that we designed is not really conducive to really, you know, let's really turn the world upside down. And I think we just need to kind of shift a little bit more into what I call a spiritual corporation type of thinking. Like, our goal is to introduce, you know, our society, hey, we're going to outdo Fort Wayne, we're going to do 1,500 more introductions this year than they are. You know, and like a little bit of that goal setting and visioning, and like, to where, if we knew what it would, that, I mean, if we had a crystal ball and we looked in it, and the crystal ball said, World War III won't happen if you introduce 100,000 young people this year, you know, because inside of that 100,000 people is a future president and a future, and this, it'll all, you know, I mean, if we knew that, we don't know that. Would we go out and introduce 100,000 people to avert World War III? I mean, I don't know. You know, it's like, we don't know. But all we know is that every person that has the revelation brings us that much closer to light and life, you know. Right now, the people we don't introduce, it delays that day. It just slows it down. So it's really in our hands.
We're doing them a disservice, is the way I see it.
Service?
We're doing them a disservice.
Yes.
By not introducing them, by not letting them. We're being selfish.
We are.
We're being very selfish.
It's really pretty rude when you think about it.
Really.
Isn't it rude to not introduce somebody to the fifth epical revelation?
I mean, that is hell. This thing, to me, is beyond as ubiquitous as if Oprah Winfrey can put out a book and everybody know about it. Surely this book should be have that same recognition. What they do with it is their own business.
Right. Yeah, my drywall contractor's on that list. And he walked into my office one day to drop off a plan or something. I said, hey, Steve, you heard about this Urantia book? Because somebody had just been in the office and I had a conversation about him. And then he walks in and I said, oh, hell, I'm on a roll. So, you know. And he sits down for a minute and we talk about it. And I said, yeah, I got one on the car. I'll loan it to you. And he called me up and said, what in the hell? He was upset. Like 2 days later. I said, what do you mean? What's up? I didn't know. I had no idea what had happened. I didn't know if he's mad at me and he's going to give me a bunch of shit about it or what. Excuse me. And he says, how come nobody ever told me about this? He said, I had to go through growing up with all this crap religion. When this book was on the planet, he was upset. I could really feel for him. I was upset when he told me that. So, sorry I didn't tell you sooner, you know. It's like, you know, it's like, what are you going to do? Yeah, well,
we never know.
You know what is critical is that when they ask you who wrote it, and then they kind of have to go by the faith to believe that celestial beings wrote this book. That's the hard part to get.
I don't always tell them that.
I never cared who wrote it.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
I could care less who wrote it.
Pretty much they go, oh, right, Celestia.
I knew it was.
That's it.
I knew it was humans. The void of ego.
Well, you have to kind of speak into the landmark. They call it speaking into the listening of your audience, right? That like a good speaker doesn't read his speech. He says he recites what he wants to say based on his speech, depending on what the room is, like who's in the room and what the mood of the room is and where the energy is traveling to, right? Because otherwise you might say something that totally offends the room, right? Like, oh, I should have said it this other way. And when you're speaking to somebody, you have to be skillful at speaking to them at the level that they can understand it at. Because some people, I would never use the word celestial to some people. I would never go there, not on my first introduction with them. Maybe after they ask me some questions, I'd start to hear, oh, they speak this certain way. Okay, I could probably use the word celestial beings with them, right? But I wouldn't, unless the person had long hair and wearing a peace symbol or something, you know, then I might use the word celestial beings. But
so what do you say when they ask you who wrote it?
I said, you know, it's really interesting. This book is—it kind of has these mysterious sources of how it came to our planet. It's kind of fascinating. So, you know, it's really kind of hard to say. But, and some people, I'll say, it seems to be written by unhuman beings. Like, but you know, I don't know. Check it out.
I say, but angels.
I've used angels a lot.
Angels are very really
acceptable. For Christians, especially.
There's a certain amount of mystery surrounding the origin of this book. I said that it's pretty well documented, and that's about as far as I got.
Yeah.
You know.
Thomas, being a fan of evidence-based medicine and program evaluation, I would always be inclined to ask, what are the proven outcomes? And, you know, is this a good place to invest my time and energy? Obviously, you cannot, at this juncture, have done some major analysis of the data to determine what sort of impact your efforts have produced. But I would like to hear what your thoughts are about that. Is there a risk of a negative outcome? And what might that be? And what have you experienced of possible
From my
maybe it would be better to invest our time and energy in some other way. I don't know that that's true, but I think it's a worthy question.
Yeah, I don't worry about backlash. I mean, I remember years ago, you know, I was going to give a talk up in Castlegar. This was probably 30 years ago. And I get a call from Chicago. Thomas, you know, and they're like saying, hey, we hear you're going to do something, you know, present the Urantia book in public. We can't have that happening. And the fear, this was 30 years ago. The fear was that the media would get a hold of it and put a big black mark on it, right? And has that ever happened?
No.
Unreasoned fear, master intellectual fraud, right? And I think we'll be wise enough to deal with whatever comes down the pike. If that ever actually happens, one of two things will happen. Either we'll have to scramble and clean up the mess we made, or the publicity will be so beneficial, we'll want to go do it again, you know? You know what I mean? Yeah, you know, sometimes bad publicity is great. And there's people that...
That's true.
What?
It's
usually
free. We're not the goofiest thing out there.
No. Yeah, let people check us out.
Well, incidentally, you know, the book is scheduled to come out in Arabic.
That's good.
In the next year or so.
That'll be interesting.
I just wonder, when I get around to a conversation with somebody, I say, look, all I can say is that this book is an alternative. And I sometimes think it could be a bigger alternative to the Quran than either in the Bible or the Talmud for that matter. You know, and it really excites me that it's going to be an error very soon.
That is exciting. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about how we can actually kind of step out there and do it. And it's too bad this light is so bad. Can't see it. So so everybody knows what a GPS is, right? Global Positioning System. So what's the two pieces of information the GPS asks for?
State.
Address.
Where are you going?
The city.
The hazard. Their transmitter.
It wants to know where you are,
right?
It'll figure out where you are.
Two points.
And then basically you have to say, this is where I want to go, right? That's the only two pieces of information that are needed, right?
And it usually knows where you are.
It will, right. Hopefully, yeah. So but it needs those two pieces of information to operate. And has anybody got a GPS system out there that says, well, how the hell did you get so lost? Did you take a left turn at Elm? Or how did you get here? You're not supposed to be here. Do GPS systems say that?
No.
But does the Urantia movement operate that way? We operate like a broken GPS system that says, you know, we took a left turn about 20 years ago, and then so-and-so screwed something up, and we got lost over here. And see, to me, we need to be like a GPS system. Who cares about the past? I wish we all had that. What's that thing in the Men in Black, the little thing, and everybody gets amnesia?
Wow.
You know, I wish we had that. I'd push it every minute. Who cares about the past?
Looking through the rearview mirror.
Yeah, you can't get anywhere. So I want to use this model because, I mean, I think people in this room already understand this. I'm preaching to the choir, but there's a tendency to say, well, I tried to introduce somebody once, right? And it didn't work. Oh, God, I'll never do that again. Or we tried going on the campuses once, and I think somebody tried that, didn't they? Yeah, oh, yeah, it didn't work so well. Couldn't get on that campus. Or whatever it is. I hear a lot of reasons why we can't do what we're called to do. But that's like a broken GPS system. All we need to know, where are we right now? Where do we want to go? And that's all we got to do. And we can go anywhere on the planet. We can just take off and who knows where we'll wind up. And I want to take just a little look at a couple of groups. Well, like Lamb or the Mormon faith is interesting, and there's all kinds of stuff on Wikipedia, and I'm not going to get into it very extensively, but the Mormons commission their young people to go out, and they know from a very early age that they're going to be asked to go on a mission, right? And it's seen as a coming-of-age ritual. And when they go on this, most of them, it says, regard as a positive event. Like they say, you know, that's the best 2 years of my life. It's a common cliche, I'm sure. But I think there's something important in, you know, the Mormons kind of have a messed up theology in some ways, right? But they have some other parts that we could just borrow from liberally and really benefit from. Imagine when you were 20 or when you were 18, the great Urantia Brotherhood in the Sky said, would you come and serve 2 years on our team and go out and tell the world about the good news? The gospel of Jesus and the fact that there's a revelation on our planet, I would have gone so quick. Take me, I'll go. What an adventure, you know, travel around the country, around the world and do that. And out of that, you wind up with an experience you never forget. You come back as somebody who knows you can talk to anybody, you can go any place, you can make a difference wherever you are in the world. And it's a very important thing. And the reason I want to bring this up is because when I think of the Urantia movement, I think about the culture that we've established, right? Remember, the word cult is in culture. We've become a kind of a hodgepodge of people that have come together with a common focus. We all read the book. That's our commonality. But the thing to consider is that we haven't really defined ourselves culturally. We've just kind of let it kind of bumble along, right? And certain things have appeared, and, oh, we like to have conferences, and, oh, we love music, and, yeah, and we love study groups. But I think it's our job to really define a culture that works for us. Like the Mormons have evolved a culture over, 150 years. They've said, we're going to train our youth and we're going to send them out. We're going to start churches all over the world. We're going to be in every single country on the planet. And they've done it. Every country that allow missionaries, every single country, they have a mission base. Every single country on the planet. There's nowhere on the planet that you can go except the countries that forbade it where you won't find Mormon missionaries out spreading the news, right?
Young people who want to go out on a mission.
And most of them want to do it.
Most of them really want to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we raise young people to quit 1927 and go out on a spiritual mission?
To me, it's a matter of putting it into our thinking, right? Cradle to grave, you know, this is what we do. We live a spiritual life, cradle to grave. As soon as you're young, I want to bring up the example of Mei Li, Paula's daughter, right? I was talking to Mei Li last night, and she's a very spiritual gal. She's in Jen Siegel's study group, so she's fully familiar with the Urantia book at 13. And she's probably a good example of cradle to grave, right? She's living inside a culture called, you get to have a spiritual life from the get-go, and we're going to train you, and you're going to go do whatever you do, and it's going to be great, right? And I asked her last night, I said, Mei Li, I said, have you ever introduced anybody to the Urantia book? And she says, oh, yeah, I've introduced people. I said, oh. I says, how many people do you think you could introduce in a year or a month or whatever? And she says, well, I don't know. I said, could you do one a week? She says, well, I could try. I said, well, I know you could try, but do you think you could do one a week? And eventually we got rid of the word try, and she says, I could do one a week. I says, great. I says, either you do it or you won't. Don't worry about it. It's like there's no failure here. You'll either do it or you won't. But the thing about her commitment to it, saying she would do it rather than just try to do it, is that now it's in her mind. A week will go by and she'll say, I haven't introduced anybody. Then it'll be top of mind, right? Because she said she would do it. And so we can actually enroll our young people into doing something that will make a difference. They're impressionable, they're young, they're idealistic, and it creates that culture, right? If we had a culture where we asked every single young person, every single child of ours to, hey, you know, why don't you introduce your teacher this week? You know, I bet your teacher would love to hear about it, your history teacher especially. Take him a book, you know. And it might seem weird sometimes, and it might not other times. And it's kind of a cultural shift that we could make. And the idea of, let's go on to some of this other stuff. So like the basic qualifications is just everybody, every young man between 19 and 25 who meets the standards is considered for a 2-year position. And the training is, what did I do here? I'm screwing myself up here. Let's see if I hit enter. They only spend like 3 weeks at a missionary training center. So when these young people go out, they're just like, they get 3 weeks of training and they're out. I thought they trained for a year. Because I asked them, and I said, how long do you guys train for? I said, oh, 2 or 3 weeks. I said, you're kidding. And you spend 2 years out there? But they have a lot of support, so. Jesus said, remember that you are commissioned to preach the gospel. He's probably teaching to the apostles right then. And you must not allow anything to divert your devotion to this one duty. None of your humanitarian labors, nor all of them, should be permitted to take the place of proclaiming this gospel. And I put this quote in there for a reason. It's like, there's a tendency for us, when we think of service, to think of, you know, going to a soup kitchen or something. And I'm not at all opposed to going to a soup kitchen. But it should not replace the higher duty, the second mile. To me, it's a first mile task to go to a soup kitchen. And I would never discourage somebody from going helping out at a soup kitchen or helping a homeless person. But we have to be careful to not get, you know, let that become a substitute for the real work of sharing the gospel with others. No, it's not.
From Jesus' perspective, he wanted his followers to go out and proclaim the following of God in the Bible.
All right.
Which one might do by one's acts in a supernatural, just as convincingly,
right,
or more so than by handing someone information about the miracle.
That's why I would never discourage anybody, but I would always make sure that they also had the element of being able and willing to share the good news, you know. And that brings up this question. What is the difference between sharing the Urantia book, we kind of touched on it, and sharing the good news, you know? And I've wrestled with this a little bit because I think, okay, I'm going to go out and tell people about the Urantia book. And people said, well, aren't you, you know, I'm not going to share the book. We should be sharing the gospel. You know, there's like these two camps. Like one says we should only talk about Jesus and And the other camp, we should just give the ranch book to everybody, right? And my attitude is that share everything and all that you can with the person that you're with. If they're ready for the gospel, give them the gospel. If all you can do is give them a card and say, hey, check this book out, the gospel will be found inside that book. So you've kind of killed two birds with one stone if they find the book. But if they're open, like Ty was and other people have been, to hearing more, then, boy, I love getting in a good spiritual conversation with people. It's nothing I'd rather do more. So I have a question about, we talked about the 365 Club a little bit. If today, actually I got some sign-up sheets if somebody wants to sign up on one.
I want
to
sign up.
Sign up to something.
Yeah,
so this does not say 365 Club, what is your quote? I'm going to add this to this. So if you want to write on your thing, I will do. And what I'd like you to do today, I'm inviting you to join the 365 Club, to take an action today, because we all go to workshops, right? And, oh, they're kind of cool, and I was interesting, and then they go home, and like it's 99% of it's, you know, a couple things stick, and the rest is kind of somewhere in the deep subconscious, right? But if you take an action, then it's like, that could be a lifelong transformation, right? Like if you make a decision about something or you shift your thinking, that's a permanent shift in how you be. So today I'd invite you to, whatever you do, think about how many people you introduce in a year. This is a simple exercise, and nobody's going to grade you on it, right? And maybe when you sign up, if you want to put a number on there, say if you introduce one person a month now on the average, you know, write down two. Write down three. Upgrade whatever it is. And just challenge yourself to say, you know, I'm going to get better and better at this, and I can do it. And then if you got $30 or whatever it costs to get a box of cards, send me an email. I'll send you a box of cards. Have exactly what you want on it. Type it out in Word, and we're going to copy and paste it so we don't screw it up. And, you know, and start introducing people. And I'd be happy to have some 365ers. People like Merrick could do probably more than that, but
I have very low expectations.
Why don't you? Well, if that's a move ahead, then I'm serious. It's big. You'll make sure that you introduce one person a month. That's cool, and you will. But in the commitment, you know, that's why Jesus ordained people, and that's why he baptized people. It was like, it's like we can't get there wishing, we can't get there hoping, but we can get there if we commit to something. And I did a lot of landmark work, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit. This quote is, the future is not someplace we are going, but one we are creating. The paths are not to be found, but made. The activity of making them changes both the maker and the destination, their destination. And we kind of touched on that we think that there's something out there that once we figure out what it is, we'll go do that, you know. A birdie will tap me on the shoulder and I'll know what to do. And we're sons of the Creator's Son. We're chips off the old block. We've got creative energy inside of us. And God left us on this planet, the Father, to actually create the world. The world that we see, this building, somebody said, I think we should have an institution of higher learning here with the religious overtones, right? Somebody said that. They spoke it and it came into existence. And all the things that we're going to create or we need to transform the planet, people like you and me are just going to speak them into existence. We're just going to say, I'm going to introduce one person a month. Watch me. When you see me coming, that's what you're going to get. And I've heard the term of laying down track in front of the train. It's an interesting concept. And It's like when you're going through the wilderness and there's no tracks, but you've got the train. You have to chop down trees and then lay some track and move ahead. And that's kind of what I feel like that's an image that kind of sticks with me. It's like we don't have tracks laid through this wilderness. We're laying track. But what happens once you lay the track? Everybody else can use the track. That's why we early adopters, and what somebody say we're one in how many thousand?
50,000.
One in 50,000. We represent 50,000 other people that don't have this revelation. But we're laying track for them. We're saying we're going to lay some track so you guys can get on the rails and ride it too. Because right now they don't, all they see is trees. They don't know there's anything out there.
Talk a little bit about campus outreach, how you do that.
Yeah, campus outreach is so the design of the 50K program is that teams come together. Like where you live in Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
You could be the one that says, I will be, like you just said it, right, Mark? Mark said, LA doesn't have anybody, hey, maybe I'll do it, you know, right? And that's all it takes. In Florida, it's Arnie. In New York, it's the, you know, I think Emilio's going to be the person there, right? Who says, there shall be campus outreach. And he's been experimenting with it. And Arnie's all fired up, and he's getting people ready to go down there. And I'll probably go down this winter and work with Arnie down in Florida. Oklahoma City, if you guys get rolling, I'll come down, I'll work with you. But somebody needs to say, I'll take it on, I'll get a little team together, and I'll do the research. And the research might look like calling up the local campuses and saying, what are your policies? Do we need to charter as a club? What do we have to do to actually get on campus and talk to people about the Rancher Books?
You set up a table with books?
You need to find out their policies. And if it's totally closed, you know, if the campus, we don't allow anything, you know, this is just, then guess what? Right next door to the campus is what?
A Starbucks, a Kinko's.
Commercial zone, right. You can wander up and down all day handing out stuff to people and tacking it on bulletin boards and putting up posters for introductory events or concerts or whatever you want to put together. So you can have a special discussion. Aliens on other planets, come hear all about it. You know, whatever draws people to it. That's where you get to be creative, right? Just make it from scratch. And when something works, we expect that you let everybody know. We'll post it on the 50K website and let other people know that, hey, this is, you know, this really worked out in Oklahoma. Try it in your area. So anytime any of us learn anything, we're going to share it with the rest of the group and keep getting better and better at it. So. Mm-hmm.
Are we supposed to be keeping a tally? Do we turn it in to you?
I would love it if people would keep logs like I have. And I'd like to post them every so often. We'll just post them on our website. Gina Pittman, who lives in Coeur d'Alene as a reader, is creating a website for 50K. And one of the links that we're developing is going to be to post 365 and how to do it. So.
Great.
And there's going to be... She has the site up. It's 50k and 5.org, and she's got the links there, but they don't go anywhere. I think there's one link that goes somewhere. So, but she's just starting to work on it now. So it'll be for those of us working on 50k to be in touch on things. And another,
you just type it up on Word document and send it to you.
Mm-hmm. Just like I have it there. Just make a little note. You know. Talked to my mechanic and we got chatting about things and seemed like he had a religious bent, and I told him about the Rancher Book and he was interested, and you know, it's just, that's all it is. Are people really clear about how easy it is to introduce people? Is there any confusion or a question about that? I don't want there to be any mystery. If you think it's hard, talk to me after tonight. Either bring it up now or talk to me later, because a good way to really train yourselves is to set a goal of introducing like 10 people on a Saturday or something. Just strictly for training reasons. Say, I'm going to see if I can introduce 10 people today. Get a pocket full of cards, head out there, bump into people, you know, give one to your waiter, give one to the checker at the drugstore, wherever you go, and see what happens. And you'll be surprised Nobody will bite your head off. Most people thank you, some profusely.
So. Do we still have time left?
We have about 20 minutes.
Well, how about we do a role play?
Sure. Yeah, we could do one, sure.
You know, there's seven people in this. Seven people in this room. This,
mm-hmm.
There's really like, then there would be seven appropriate approaches to introducing the orangel, because there are seven people in this room. I don't know if there's any one way. Not only that, I think each one of us would probably have to adapt spontaneously based on the person that you're approaching also.
You know, my favorite ball to hit is a curveball. So if you want to practice with me, Mary, come on up and throw me a curveball.
A curveball? Okay.
A spitball, too.
I'll just give you the link at McDonald's or someplace like
all
that.
All right.
Okay. Will that be all, sir?
You know, I wanted extra double-double, super the cholesterol special. Do you have that?
Oh, yeah. We've got that. I'll get that for you.
There's one more thing I'd like to find out. Do you have any kind of a spiritual interest at all? And I know you work here a lot, and I see you here every day I come in here.
Sure, I guess I'm spiritual. I don't go to church.
You don't go to church? Oh. Do you believe in God, though?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, cool. You know, I didn't used to believe in God, and I do now. And something I really found that really helps me is this book here. It's called the Urantia book. I started reading it years ago, and it's just really helped me out. So I just wanted you to have it.
Your
what? Urantia. Urantia is actually the name of our planet. So when you read the book, you'll learn all about it. But
what's in it?
Oh, there's a lot of people behind me. I can't say, but I suggest you go to the Truth Book website. It's not on that card.
This is left address.
Yeah, and there's a little quote of the day you can get. So just sign up and and get that quote of the day, and then if you get a chance, get a book. And you can go online and read it. And
sure, I'll try it.
All right, thank you.
Oh, here's your double queen.
Oh, I don't eat that. I don't eat that crap. I just spent my money to introduce you to the book. So.
It really helps if your card is so beautiful.
It does.
It's a beautiful card.
I like how the light is appearing to shine down. Or it could go the other way, but to a focal point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to keep improving our handout materials, so that's the goal.
Do you have an image of that little character, the graphic that you put out, the book with the wings?
Oh, I don't really have that.
You don't have that on your computer anymore? I just thought it was terrific. Oh, God, I thought that was just God's little helper.
Yeah, if you go to the 50K and 5 site, Gina's actually got the wings going like this.
Oh, I just think it's great.
Well, thank you.
I just think it's fabulous, you know.
That just came to me one day, and I just cranked it out one night, and that was kind of fun.
I sent you an email.
About
the buses, the school buses, that there's advertising now being made available on school buses.
Are you that serious?
Really? Yeah, and I think, school districts are making advertising space available on school buses, and I thought that is the perfect place to put that little book with the wings. It says God's little help.
Mm.
And if it causes controversy, that's perfect.
That's okay.
That we just if they want to make us take it off because it's religious, I'd love to end up in the Supreme Court.
That's good.
It's just fine.
Well, I say use all the creative ideas you can. If you can come up with some idea, like billboards or whatever, and like I say, we got people that do graphics, so just, use our resources. We're building a team of media people for that reason. So, this, unfortunately, the light's not very good here, but this is something my son came up with, too. It's got a beam of light coming down. I really like the way he put that together. And he did it for a class project. It's your Rancher Conference 2010. That's it. But we're working on creating stunning imagery that when people see it and you hand them a card, they're going to know that you're serious and you're like a first-class organization and you're professional and you've got a real organization. You're not just on a napkin kind of, read this book. Let me get my napkin out. You know, it's we have the right tools to do our work. So it's important that we don't look too unprofessional. You know, if we were a spiritual corporation, right? Don't corporations train their widget salesmen to how to train widget, you know, sell widgets? Yeah, and so we have to think like that. You know, Landmark Education is another group that's really, I didn't really have any slides for them, but I just want to touch on Landmark a little bit, our last little bit of time here, because Landmark's model is something we could also copy from. I mean, the Mormons have something we can take, but Landmark Education is an interesting group. They're based out of San Francisco, and it started with Werner Erhard's work back in the 70s.
Oh, God, yes.
Right. It started out of Est, but when all that flack came down in the media, when they blackballed Werner so much, he sold the rights to his technology to the employees, which became Landmark Education, and they keep refining it and improving it. And it's really an incredible program now. And it was actually a Urantia book reader who told me to, hey, go do Landmark, you know. It's like, and the combination has been really powerful in my life, because Landmark has this way of thinking that they train people in where they you realize that the only thing that's stopping me from doing anything I want, it's just my belief systems. There's nothing else. And once you can separate your belief systems, like set them over here, like, okay, I see my belief system. And now, if that's over there, what's here? Nothing and everything, right? If there's nothing there, like nothing in your way, then everything appears, right? Everything is possible, and anything is possible. But if I got my belief systems up here like a blinder, you know, it's like, well, I know what I got to do. You know, I know there's other stuff out there, but you can't see it because your beliefs. So you get your beliefs, you put it in the past, say, okay, that's what happened back then. And that's the kind of thinking the Urantia movement's going to need to really become a world player. And I think in terms of us not being this little sleepy movement that people never heard of the 200 introductions I've done, maybe 5 people had heard of it. Maybe. Somewhere back in the past. Yeah, I heard that a long time. Yeah, I kind of heard that. And that's not very good. 5 and 200. That means we got some work to do. So, as an example of how Landmark thinks, like Nike has done training with Landmark, they did a McDonnell Douglas, that builds a big aircraft and military contracts and stuff, hired Landmark because they were so inefficient they couldn't even come in close to budget. They were just millions of dollars over budget and everybody was battling. And Landmark Education came in, their business development team, and they worked with McDonnell Douglas. For the first time ever, they came in ahead of schedule and under budget, which has never happened in the history of military contracts. Because they taught team thinking, they got all their stuff out of the way, so all they could focus on was what was at hand, right? It just made them very dynamic team players. So things like this are things we can learn from. We have to, as a movement, reinculturate ourselves. I keep saying that word because either we're going to do that or we're going to continue 50 years, 100 years from now, we'll be having conferences and, yeah, gee, I wish we'd, you know, we got to get the book out a little more. Or 50 years from now, we'll have so many people reading this book, the world will just be upside down. Like, it'll just be causing this tumult of transformation around the world that is just amazing, right? And I think we owe it to Michael. What a special planet we're on. Yeah, geez. Michael came here. And we're going to kind of piss it away. We're not going to piss it away. We're going to like say, hey, Michael, partnership with you, anything's possible. We're going to play the big game. We're going to play with the big kids. You know, Deepak Chopra, slide over. Oprah, get out of the way. But that's the kind of thinking we have to have. We can't think any other way. We have to say the best is what we deserve. We need to operate like the best team on the planet. And we need to be willing to go there. Get the excuses out of the way. Thank you for your excuses. Now let's roll up our sleeves. Get the best training. Let's bring facilitators in. Let's bring Landmark. Let's bring Stephen Covey in. Let's bring Carnegie in. Let's bring those people that know how to turn corporations and religious institutions into dynamic powerhouses. Let's bring the Mormons in. I don't care. Let's bring anybody that we can get to train us. Let's bring them in to train us into a first-notch organization. So, remember that you are commissioned to preach this gospel. I take that personally. So, I also say, like, why let the apostles have all the fun, right? You know, it's like, we look back at the Bible or something, or in the Yerusha book, and Jesus was giving them all this instruction, and they got to go out and turn the world, the Roman world, upside down. It's like, why do they get to have all the fun? We want to do that. We want to turn this world upside down.
I'm not careful with that one. Maybe we all ended up being killed and tortured.
Well, we'll maybe throttle back a little bit after our first martyr, but we're not there yet. So we're a long ways from having martyrdom. I haven't heard of any martyrs yet. I think Mark Bloomfield's probably come the closest to getting his life taken away. So this picture Tebow used on the first card he built, we took to L.A., and we took it off because the gal looks pretty sad, but it touches me because she kind of personifies that lost generation, right? That, you know, slightly sad, depressed, you know, I don't understand the world. It's just too something for me, and what a mess it is out there. And I don't know what my life's going to look like. And should I raise kids in this world, or should I just cut the cord? You know, what's the deal? And you know, it's really about us becoming useful to people like that. And if we're not, it's a sham to read the book. You might as well put it away. I'm done talking. Thank you, guys. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah.